In this episode of Geo Talk, we speak to one of the creators of Munzee. We ask for your thoughts on opencaching.com, and we get into the Christmas spirit, geocaching style. All this and more on Geo Talk. Welcome to episode 81 of GeoTalk for December 2011. I'm your host, Darren, from the Spin Doctors, coming to you from Sydney. And welcome, whether you're from Australia or New Zealand or from overseas. If you're down under, I'm not too sure what the weather's like, but for pretty much most of East Coast of Australia, it's been terrible. And we've got another La Nina this summer, and the weather has meant, particularly in Sydney, has been a lot of rain, a lot of grey sky, and fairly cool. In fact, it's the coolest start to summer for 50 years in Sydney, and I think in Canberra it was very similar. It was about 45, 47 years. It's been a very cool start also in Brisbane, and very wet down in Melbourne. Seems to be the only part of Australia that seems to be getting any decent weather is Perth, and it's been getting some fairly hot weather. So hopefully it's doing better over your way. In New Zealand, well, it's not too bad. I did mention I was over there in September. I think the weather has improved a bit, but still it's been a fairly cool start for Australia and New Zealand this summer. Now, one bit of software that I got tipped off on recently, being a Mac user, this one's of interest. It's called iCaching, I-C-A-C-H-I-N-G, and you can download it from iCaching.eu. It's from Europe. It's also available in the Apple App Store. Now, it is a little bit pricey. It's about $15, depending on where you're from. $15 in Australia, probably a little bit more in New Zealand. I haven't had a huge play with it yet. It seems, just on the face of it, to be one of the better Mac geocaching pieces of software. It isn't GSAC, and given that it's on the Mac platform, we probably shouldn't compare it with GSAC, but it does work with the geocaching live API, so you can update with your pocket queries live, and you can also update cache log notes live fairly quickly. It's pretty seamless in that. It does use Geocache Babble as well, but I haven't downloaded any coordinates from the software into the GPS at the moment. So hopefully over the summer I might tinker with that and have a bit more of a play with it, and give a few more thoughts along the way. But if you've got any thoughts on it, please drop us an email at geotalkpodcast@gmail.com, or you can call it in on our hotline, 02-800-50-436. Long-time listeners will know that I'm a big fan of the blog It's Not About the Numbers, and they had a very interesting opinion piece appear about 4 weeks ago on opencaching.com. Now, it was admittedly from a reviewer from the Groundspeak geocaching.com website, but I thought a lot of the points that they raised were quite interesting. And whilst I think there's a lot of speculation that's gone on, and no one apart from those who actually work at opencaching.com really know what's going on there, it did raise some very serious questions about the fact that they've been going for a year and their success seems to be, compared to the other websites, fairly limited. I'll give you a link in the show notes. If you head to the website geotalkpodcast.com, you can click on the link and check out that article, or just head to It's Not About the Numbers blog, and you can find out for yourself. But I'm interested for anyone, any callers to call in and tell us what they think of opencaching.com. Have they tried it out? Have they used it? Are they putting all their caches on it? Are they avoiding it altogether? Give us a call or drop us an email. Love to hear from you. You've been living under a rock that's hidden by a geocache, you probably by now have heard of the geocaching power trail on the ET Highway over in Nevada in the US. It was set up and then it disappeared. Now it's back again. Well, it's made it onto TV, and there's quite an interesting television article. It goes for about 5 minutes, all about the ET Highway and the growth in tourism that it's bringing to this one tiny town in the middle of outback Nevada. It's worth checking out. I'll give you a link in the show notes. Head to geotalkpodcast.com and you can check out all about the ET Power Trail. Once again, the people at Geocaching Australia have got a movable cache race going on this summer. I neglected to mention it last episode, but it's not too late to get a to get a moving cache in on this. It's called Leapfrog Race, and Leapfrog Race will be running throughout December and January of 2012. And the idea is that your cache has to be fit in with the theme of a frog. Now, I think they chose it because it's a leap year next year, so they decided also frogs are probably easy to get from stores. But if you're living in Australia, you've probably seen a few of these frogs appearing here and there with log sheets. So if you want to get part of that fun, go to caching games, cachinggames.com/leapfrog. And in a final bit of news, a quick cheerio to cachemaniacs.com, to Daryl W4 and Firefly03. They're winding up the podcast after about 6 years of interviews, and somewhere in the order of about 250-plus interviews with geocaches, they've decided to wind it up. It's a fantastic podcast, and even if you haven't started listening to it, it's worth tuning in now, registering it now. They'll be keeping the episodes up there for quite a while, I think. And you can listen to all the different players from different parts of the world and get different ideas on how to play the game and just hear some fascinating stories. Their website is cachemaniacs, cachemaniacs.com. We'll give you a link in the show notes, but check that out. And congratulations once again to Daryl and Dree for 6 years of fantastic podcasting. Well, now it's time to head across the ditch to New Zealand and get an update from Alan, Radio Nut 50.
Yeah, hi there, everyone, from Radio Nut 50 in Hamilton, New Zealand, here with some caching comment for this month. Now, power trails seem to be popping up all over this area these days. First, there were two in the Auckland area, one to the north of the city and one to the west. Then, now, we have two in the Waikato area, near Hamilton, one slightly north again and one to the west. And way up further north of Auckland, around about Wellsford, there's another one there on a walking trail. Now, I see these are getting lots of activity, so there's lots of people sampling the experience of finding mini caches in a short time. But I wonder how long this different aspect of the hobby is going to keep growing. It's going to be interesting to see if there's too many more come up this year. Butterfly Lady and I had a week in Wellington in November. It was leading up to the wedding of our daughter. Our theory was that we'd go down there and have a few days to do some caching at the start of the week and then get busier close to the weekend with wedding arrangements and things like that. Well, the weather didn't really cooperate. It was wild and stormy for the early part of the week, and then it calmed down for the wedding, much to everyone's relief, but that wasn't very conducive to rounding up too many caches. Of the small bunch that we did do, the one that stands out is called OPT on Clyde Quay. Now, this brings the seeker to the old Overseas Passenger Terminal in Wellington Port. This terminal on a wharf is pretty much in decay now, and the cache notes tell us that there was a scheme to develop it into apartments a while ago, but that hasn't gone ahead either. From the tip of that wharf, we could see across the harbour two shiny cruise ships, berthed where they go now, well away from this historic spot. The location is really interesting, and that hide was something special. Well done, ADV. That's an excellent hide sitting there in full view of the public. I'd recommend this one to those who like those sneaky things. As a footnote to this wedding trip we had, I will mention that there was an earth cache right at the outdoor location of the ceremony. But unfortunately, as parents of the bride, it was perceived inappropriate for me to shoot off in the middle of the service just to gather the details, even though the bride and the groom are caches as well. So we'll have to go back there again sometime soon to bag that one. Okay, at the end of this rather short burst before Christmas, let's have a roundup of the events in our country. Coming up real soon is Tramper Ted's Christmas Conclusion. It's in Auckland on the 26th of December. Then there's one listed as Levin Welcomes All Caches on the 23rd of January by Cardiff Boy. There's a Kaharangi Barbecue Campout in Coromandel by Greenblatt and Kiwi Leon on the 4th of February. We've got a Valentine's Day 2012 by Kiwi Explorer on the 12th of February, of course, in Nelson, and Getting Back on Track by Red Iguana in Christchurch on the 29th of February. Plus, we have some participants in a worldwide leap year, worldwide multi-cache event. There's one in Dunedin with Guapo, Wellington with Gone Fishing, and Auckland by Funky Monkey Zone, all listed on the leap day of 29th of February. So as we come to the end of this session and the last one for the 2011 year, I wish you, Darren, and all the listeners a really great Christmas and a happy new year. And may we all have lots of fine weather for successful caching.
Well, thanks for that, Alan. And I hope you and your family and everyone over in New Zealand has a fantastic Christmas. Just a quick reminder that we're also on Twitter and Facebook. You can follow us at Twitter at GeoTalkPodcast, and you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/GeoTalk. And once again, our feedback number, if you've got any questions or comments or any milestones that you want to celebrate with us, don't forget to write it in at geotalkpodcast@gmail.com, or you can call it in on 02-800-50-436. Well, it's time now for the GeoTalk trivia question, and given that we've asked you what your thoughts are on opencaching.com, we thought we'd ask you, how many of these open caches are there in Australia and New Zealand? So how many OX geocaches are there in Australia and New Zealand? The answer to that at the end of the podcast. On GeoTalk, we're heading across to the US to chat to one of the founders of a craze that's sweeping around the world and even here in Australia, Munzee. And welcome to the podcast, Josh.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on the podcast today.
Now, we've chatted about Munzee on a few episodes now, and I'll post a few questions to you about it and so forth, but I'll give the floor to you and let you describe for us in about 60 seconds or so, what is Munzee?
Well, Munzee is a smartphone-based game where, essentially, utilizing your smartphone, you're able to do a real-world scavenger hunt, that coincides with the geolocation of the specific game pieces. So individual players can put out their own game pieces, collect points, and then also seek out other game pieces and gain points from finding those. So we like to think of it as a scavenger hunt for the 21st century. It's we try to continue to upgrade, keep it new, keep it fresh, do all kinds of different promos and stuff like that to just kind of keep the game changing. So that's pretty basically what it is. It's it's just a little toy that we've been playing around with for a while, and it's really catching on as it continues to grow.
How does it differ from geocaching?
Well, to be honest, I've been a geocacher since 2003, and pretty active in it. I really, really enjoy geocaching. I love being outdoors, and I love that stash container, hunt. Geocaching is definitely, kind of one specific, game in the geolocation based gaming kind of genre that has developed. Munzee's significantly different, in my opinion, in the fact that you're looking for these game pieces and you're actually scanning them with your phone. So it's a little bit more similar to the old virtuals that Groundspeak used to have, and we allow it to kind of, even though we've only been live for about 6 months now, we're kind of allowing it to continue to change and evolve based on feedback, based on what a couple of our beta panels have kind of given back to us as far as what they're looking for in the next set of features, and just kind of continuing to take that feedback and change the game to be more fun and be more challenging.
Now, you mentioned it's been around for about 6 months. It's seen some pretty rapid growth, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. In the first 60 days, we really just put it live to be out in beta format and to continue to test and grow, and it was it was in West London within like a week and a half. I mean, with no media blitz or marketing or anything like that, it bounced from basically North Texas and a couple other places in the United States to almost like Central America and Western Europe within a month. There were, I think, three continents on board, and within 3 months we were on six continents. One of our more rabid players actually put a hideout in Antarctica already. So literally within half a year we're on all seven continents. So it's exceeded our greatest expectations and dreams, but it's been fun.
Mm-hmm. Now, regular listeners to the podcast will know that both myself and Alan, Radio Nut 50 over in New Zealand, have given it a go, and we both like the concept. We've come across a bit of a problem with mobile reception. I don't know what it's like in the US, but in Australia and New Zealand, we have a couple of problems with different networks and different patchy, you know, sort of reception and so forth. The game really relies on that. Are there ways that you're looking to get around that, things such as offline modes?
Certainly, it's we've got a list of stuff that we want to do, and you know, the Munsey team is right now it's five individuals working together, and we've got some groups of people that do you know, beta testing and feature testing for us before we try to release that public. But certainly something we didn't even, you know, really plan on having to get to that, you know, that far down the list is offline capturing and the ability to do an offline hunt, because, you know, domestically in the U.S., where we, you know, kind of where we pioneered everything, there's pretty decent reception in most places, at least enough to get you within the accuracy boundaries. And most people have a large cache of minutes a large cache of data that they can kind of dip into. So, you know, rapidly updating the map and stuff like that, the original features that we had built in, you know, really just were based on that, you know, kind of on that myopic view of lots of cheap data and reception everywhere. And we immediately got a lot of feedback from Australian players specifically, and also from players in Western Europe that said, you know, we've got really spotty reception here, or you know, data is very, very expensive. What can we do in order to, you know, reduce the amount of data that we use? Because, you know, it was like they loved playing the game, but, you know, they also didn't want to you know, a $400 U.S. phone bill every month just by playing. So we did a lot of tweaks to the map and to in ways that it caches the map and give you some optional refreshing features in the Android version and some other things. But we basically optimized it as good as we could to try to lean out how much data it uses. And then to your question, the offline capturing, it's definitely something that we have in the works. But a big thing that we're really proud of is the fact that it's pretty hard to cheat the system. There's not going to be a lot of people getting the Munsey points, you know, from behind a desk, you know, and faking their location. Unfortunately, that's kind of been something we've had to try to work with the offline capturing, is making sure that people can verify their finds. And we've had a lot of players provide us feedback in ways that we could do it. Some of them we thought of, some of them were really just kind of radical ideas that we may or may not have considered yet. So it's certainly on the list, and it's something that we continue to work on, but the architecture is tricky. But we hope, you know, you know, really soon to have something that we can at least roll out and beta test. Because certainly we've got a lot of players that have really embraced the game and have provided us a lot of feedback, but we want to make sure that we keep the game integrity solid, but allow those players that really want to put some Munsies in some really cool places that may not have cell reception, that we can put them there, but, you know, somebody can find those, you know, via an offline mode.
It sounds like, I mean, in 6 months, it's come quite a long way and quite a lot of players, and there's a lot of expectation. In a way, do you feel like you've become a victim of your own success?
you might kind of look at it like that. You know, our big thing is we all try to stay active on the forums. We get dozens of emails daily, and we respond back to everybody in as quick a manner as we can. You know, particularly, you know, for example, on the Android platform, you know, with iOS, you know, there are very few iterations of the iPhone. Mm. With Android, there are several manufacturers that may have several individual tweaks. So Chris has really been involved in, who's our Android developer, he's been really involved in getting a lot of feedback from people that may be on networks, you know, in Europe or networks in Eastern Asia or wherever, that need just little bitty tweaks to the code to work well. And he really tries to bounce back and forth and make sure that gets taken care of. Mm-hmm. But what we don't want is somebody that likes the idea but may get frustrated with a feature or a lack of something to just give up, to just abandon the game. I mean, the app today versus the app 3 months ago on both platforms is drastically different. But most of our players have, you know, have seen that we do respond as quick as we can, that we're pretty active in the forums, and that, you know, we're supporting our our little Munsee communities that are popping up everywhere. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's been a really rapid growth, and it's continued to stay exciting. You know, we've continued to see growth. You know, we really haven't had a plateau or a drop off. It's pretty steady growth. We eclipsed 100,000 captures a few weeks ago. I mean, 100,000 captures. It's pretty amazing when you kind of just sit back and think about it. It's been awesome.
And is it still a part-time job for you guys? You said there were five of you working on it. Obviously, you've got your normal 9-to-5 jobs.
Right. Yes. I mean, we've all got full-time jobs and families and everything else. It is an after-hours passion for us. But we're able to work together. Each of us does a pretty specialized part of the development. We help each other out when we can. So there's actually a five of us in the core group. There's the developers, and then on the expansion side as well. So yeah, it's still a part-time job for now. Who knows? Maybe we can make it a full-time job sometime soon.
Which leads me to the question: at the moment, the game is free. I mean, that's how geocaching started, and many players still play it that way. But are you looking at a model where you might be able to monetize the game, maybe be able to generate an income? And what sort of ideas have you got in the works at the moment?
At the core of the game, we always want Munsee to be free. We want the app to be free. We want the access to be free. It's a game at its core base, and that's the big reason that we've done it. We've got some pipelines for revenue. We've got a small store. We do accept donations. We've had some players send us some small donations, and that's really great. To kind of get that support from those people. We are tweaking Business Mondays and the Business Mondee platform, mostly on the domestic side right now, but just to give some businesses ways to integrate Munsee into their marketing. So that's been something that we've continued to work on. And just recently in the U.S., we did a Burger Munsee weekend where we essentially turned a certain percentage of Munsees in the U.S. into little cheeseburgers. And if you're the first person to snag that that Munsee as a cheeseburger, we're actually mailing out free coupons for a cheeseburger. So obviously we had to do it on a small scale to test the tech and test the platform and make sure that everything will go well. But in the long term, we hope to be able to provide real world bonuses and rewards to our virtual players. So we've got a lot of stuff in the hopper as far as trying to do something, but I guess the bottom line of it is we always want the game for the players to be a free app and for the game to be fun. So whether you're out there, snagging 1,000 points in a weekend, or you're out there and you find one Munsee, but it was just in a really spectacular place. It's really all about the hunt. It's about getting outside and having fun and going to these new places and putting Munsees in places that, are really special to you, that allows you to have other people go to that place and kind of just share in that location. So yeah, there's a lot of reasons.
Now, one of the fun and interesting aspects of Munsee is the point system. Apart from the bragging rights, I'm not too sure where it might lead to in the future. But one or two listeners to the podcast have written into us to suggest that by allocating points to the placing of Munsees, it's creating a bit of a culture where people are placing them and then not maintaining them. And I've come across, and both Ellen as well, have come across a number where the Munsees have been removed or they haven't fared well in the weather and so forth. Do you see this as a problem in the US, or can you see this as a developing problem, and would you be looking at maybe changing the way in which the points are awarded?
Well, that's a good piece of feedback that we have gotten quite a bit. Originally, we've got the initial bonus of your Munsee's got to be there in order for you to get the residual points. So for somebody to find your Munsee and scan it, it's got to be there. But on the maintenance side of things, just as with any kind of game where you're putting a game piece or a location or something out there, it's got to be maintained. So in the last 2 months or so, we did provide that if you don't find a Munzee, that it does send an email to the Munzee owner. So, you know, that's allowing that communication back and forth. So, if, you know, when we first rolled out, if somebody couldn't find your Munzee, you really didn't know about it. With the journal feature and now the email notification feature, that's hopefully that's going to help thin that out a little bit. I know it's happened to me a few times where, you know, it just you know, came off of the sticky place or the zip tie or wherever it was located. And so I've been able to go and put those back out. You know, a big thing on the, you know, kind of coming up in the, hopefully in Q1 next year is going to be some kind of maintenance modes where it might be some bonus points for maintenance or, you know, just being able to give some type of incentive to make sure the players are checking on their own Munzees. Because we definitely, you know, we definitely want, you know, users, you know, they're going to get lost or muggled or, you know, ruined by the weather. We want, you know, users that when they ultimately get to the Munzee location, you know, we do want that game piece to be there and be able to be scanned.
Are there any other developments that you've got in the works in the next few months?
We've got a list of ideas that if there were 10 times as many of us, I still think it would take years to put everything out. But we've got a couple different types of Munzees that we're hoping to roll out in the near future. We've got obviously the business Munzee architecture that we're hoping to integrate, you know, widespread, you know, in order for the businesses to see some advantages, but also for players to be able to, you know, essentially show that loyalty to places that they frequent regularly. And we've got two or three promos coming up in the next year where, you know, you've seen some where they were worth different point values. You've seen some where you needed to be the first to get back to different places. You know, maybe we're going to see some. I don't want to get too close to the point, but maybe we're going to see some Munzee features that haven't been seen yet. So we're hoping to just continue to put out new features that everybody likes and just kind of keep the game exciting.
Well, it sounds like an exciting future ahead for Munzee. And one of the other bits of feedback and that I've been getting is that you guys listen and you've got a very active forum. And as you said, you guys are very active in there as well. And I think that's one of the things that the Munzee community really appreciate, that there's that listening and taking on of both criticism and positive feedback. So it sounds like the project is here for at least a while longer.
Absolutely. I mean, we've dedicated a lot of personal money and time to it, but we've seen a lot of feedback. And, you know, a lot of it has been positive, and some of it has been, you know, definitely, you know, a little bit negative, you know, with stuff that people wanted fixed. And we take that to heart, and we try to see, you know, what we can put into the game in order to, you know, make it fun for everybody. We really do try to listen, you know, and we respond to just about every notice that we get. If we don't respond, I would say it's only by an oversight. You know, send something back to us and hey, didn't hear from you guys, and you'll definitely hear back from us. But we appreciate all the feedback. I mean, the good feedback and the pats on the back are great, and the few you know, that point out some weaknesses are things that we've fixed. I mean, a lot of the newer features are stuff that were player suggested, and we bumped them from further down the list up to the top of the development list.
Well, look, on behalf of the podcast, thanks very much, Josh, for joining us and explaining Munzee and having a chat about it. And hopefully we'll talk to you again maybe in 12 months' time.
Hey, Darren, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. We really have fun with the game. And I just think it's amazing that, you know, a podcast from Australia is taking some time to have a chat with me. So I enjoy it. And I'm really glad to be on here and just to get to share the game a little bit.
Well, hopefully we'll bring you down and we can do a one-on-one face-to-face. On behalf of the podcast,
absolutely.
Thanks for...
Absolutely, that sounds like a plan.
Thanks for joining us, Josh.
All right, thank you, Darren.
Time now to have a look at some of the events that are occurring in Australia throughout January. And on the 2nd of January at Cape Patterson, there's the New Year's party down in Victoria. on the 2nd of January. There's also the New Year Dinner Party that's nearby, probably part of the same event. Also on that day is the Tibimbilla Holiday Caching Bash and Barbecue down in the ACT. On the 6th of January is the Helensburg Meet and Greet. That's just on the northern outskirts of Wollongong. On the 8th of January is the Lawrence Moot. That's being held up in the mid-north coast of New South Wales. On the 10th of January, the Meet and Greet the Mexicans being held in Adelaide. On the 15th of January, there's a couple of events. There's the Urban Treasure Ramble 5001 being held in Adelaide. There's the Gippsland Annual Meeting being held in Churchill down in Victoria. There's the Summertime at Whyalla Beach over in South Australia. And It's Our Birthday being held in Balan over in Western Victoria. On the 22nd of January, there's the Manjadal New Year event just on the southeast of Perth in Western Australia. On the 28th of January, there's the Port Elliot Seaside Foreshore that's being held down in South Australia. On the 28th of January, there's the Trivial Shenanigans just on the northern suburbs of Brisbane in Queensland. And also on the 28th of January is the Seaside Foreshore Seato that's being held down near Victor Harbour. Well, in the interview that I had with Josh from Munsey's earlier in the podcast, you would have heard I asked a question about the placement of Munsey's, and one of the people who wrote in was actually Brian Wright, also known as Fluffy Fish, and he said, love the podcast, well, very well produced. You made the comment about Munsey's last episode where some of them are missing and haven't been maintained. I think that it will be a bit of an issue in the upcoming months where Munsey's will need to be maintained. And my principle with them is to treat them just like geocaches, and that you should maintain them and place them close to where you live and work or visit. He says that too many Munsey's are being placed by travellers, and he doubts that they will return to maintain them. Guess that giving points to the ploy of Munsey may come back to bite the reviewers. So I thought I'd put that question forward to Josh, and Brian, hopefully you've got some satisfaction as I did. I think it seems to be that the guys that are developing that software are taking on board a lot of the feedback from its users. So we'll see what happens over the next few months. We've also got two calls that have come in, and they're coming on the GeoTalk hotline. Don't forget, it's 02800 5436. That's 02800 50436. The first one's a milestone from Craig Ratt down in Tasmania.
G'day, GeoTalk. It's Craig Ratt down in Tasmania. I'm just ringing up with a milestone. Just clocked up my 100th GCA cache, something I'm extremely ecstatic about. And it's on a movable for the Leapfrog Frog Race as well, so, you know, and right near home. So absolutely stoked. I'm looking over the Tamar River and just thinking life doesn't get much better. Anyhow, thanks for that. Have a good time. Bye.
Thanks for that call, Craig Ratt. And now we go across to New Zealand to Martin, also known as the Organist.
G'day, Darren. The Organist here from New Zealand. Just to announce that I've found two geocaches on one date, 11,200 kilometres apart. So one in Kaiapoi, New Zealand on the 13th of December, and the other one in Los Angeles, California, also the 13th of December. Oh, by heaven, that was a quick run. Cheers.
And our final call comes from Victoria from a somewhat spooky-sounding geocacher. Let's tune in and see what he's up to.
It's Kangaroo Versus here. I've just done a first-to-find 10 o'clock at night, and some other caches have just arrived. They don't know I'm here. It's quite a dark park. I'm going to attempt to sneak up on them. I'm trying to walk where there's little backlight. I'm covered by some trees. I can get pretty close. Let's see how I go. I get closer. Oh, this is nasty. This is nasty. Can't get any closer. I'm about 30 metres away, 10 o'clock at night. Dark park.
Oh, God, God, that's my heart of the Giant
Hulk
podcast.
G'day, it's Covert Hypnosis here again. I just ramped to debrief on what just happened. So I'm at GC380X7, which is Carrumdown Rec Reserve number 1. It's the first hired by a team called Cronia. And I arrived here a bit earlier. went hunting for the first to find. It wasn't what it was meant to be. And then about 21 metres out, I found a pretty obvious place for the hide and found a cache underneath there the second time that I searched the area. Then, while wandering back to the car, I noticed another car arrived a little bit further away, so that didn't actually know that I was here. So I set myself up expecting them to be sent down a choke point towards me since there's a big fence here, but instead they walked around the other side of the tennis courts here. And by that time, I'd climbed up a tree intending to jump out of the tree. So I then had to climb down the tree and run along the tree line that runs behind the other side of the tennis courts. Managed to get to about 25 metres. I had already recognised the team as Magdalene and Epic Mac. I've seen them a few times. They are really quick on the first to find, and I tend to find them either at the first find when I get the second or when I've got the first find and they get the second. Anyway, snuck up, got really close to Maggie Lands, and as you heard, I just started screaming out and got quite a fright out of them, and then I started looking in the wrong place, and I said, look, just use your communication sense and have a look at where you'd hide a cache, because the cord's a bit out on this one. So saving them a little bit of time, once they found a good place to look, they did a search, and soon enough, cache was in hand, and we're still sitting here waiting for anyone else to arrive to have a bit of a chat and see how they're going. It's usually a pretty big mini event, first to finds around here, but so far, just the two teams. So, COVID Hypnosis signing off on another at night first to find hunt with a bit of action. Bye for now.
And if that call troubles you, there's actually another two that we received over the past few weeks. And rather than try and slot them into the podcast, what I'll do is I'll upload them to the website and you can download them and have a listen to yourself from the geotalkpodcast.com website. But I think a warning to all Melbourne geocachers, if you're going to go searching for an FTF in the middle of the night, just make sure Covert Hypnosis isn't in the area. That's about it for this edition of the podcast, this December 2011 edition. Before I go, I better give you the answer to the trivia question. That is, how many open caches are there in Australia and New Zealand? And the answer is 196 in Australia and 36 in New Zealand. And I suppose when you realise that there's only been around for about 12 months, that's actually a bit more than there were geocaches during the first year of geocaching.com. But obviously, there are a lot more players these days. So it remains to be seen what happens with the format, and we'll certainly hear more about it in the next few months. And also, before I go, on behalf of both myself, Nay, Zach and Noah, the Spin Doctors, we want to wish all of our listeners to the GeoTalk podcast a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And I look forward to speaking to you and hearing about your stories and giving you more geocaching podcasting content in 2012. And to take it out, I've got a song that's been recorded by one of the GC.com reviewers over in the US, known as Honey Chili, who's sort of turned an old 1953 classic called Santa Baby and given it a bit of a geocaching twist. Until next time, safe geocaching.
Signal baby, slip a present under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, signal baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Signal baby, a geo coin or two would be cool for you. Some of them make me drool, signal baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the guidelines that I obeyed. Think of all the swag that I left in trade. Next year I could be just as good if all my geocaching needs are understood. signal, honey. One more thing would be really sweet. My feet with some new hiking boots, so cute. So hurry down the chimney tonight. Signal cutie, fill my stocking with an Android and apps. Don't forget to include the maps. So hurry down the chimney tonight. Signal baby, I really need my own private jet, my pet. We'll geocache every day, hooray. So hurry down the chimney tonight. I'll help you trim my Christmas tree if you'll bring me a red hamster tea. I really do believe in you. If you believe in me. Signal baby, forgot to mention one small request. I'm stressed. Need a new GPS. Say yes and hurry down the chimney tonight. Ooh, I like that one.